This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makoko-Tlela.
Dumela Gary and Dumela to our podcasters and our guest today.
What about the Sanbonani? That's mine.
Yeah.
Based on the old president. You're now on the vendor. You're now talking.
Hey, Matekwani.
Cool.
Lance. Yeah.
Okay, today's show is about an application to court by a ratepayers association regarding shebeens, of all things. Residents are and were complaining that their neighborhoods are overrun with shebeens and that these establishments are a problem and contribute to the degeneration of their communities.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Lines, as you well know, shebeens have historically played an extremely important part in unifying roles in communities. And historically, their operators were the much-loved shebeen queens, as they were called. They sold everything, including a decent meal, a brandy, a gin, and then also the self-made alcoholic beverage known as skokkian. This is our much beloved who passed away today, Hugh Masekela, Ramapolo Hugh Masekela. We play the song as a tribute, a song in his memory, one of the greatest of all time South Africans. Wasn't he, Lance?
He was an icon. May his soul rest in peace, and for all the contribution that his music has actually made towards the liberation of our country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lance, the song is called Skokkian. Of all things, do you know much about the drink?
Yeah, it's like Nkomboti. It's very potent. Yeah. That's all I can say. It's very, very potent.
Did you sit in the shebeen drinking a Nkomboti or a...
Not quite.
Yeah. Okay, with us in studio today is attorney Anele Khumalo. She's with Worksmans in Johannesburg, and she's with Maurice Smithers, who represents the Yeovil Bellevue Ratepayers Association. They're going to tell us about the latest court decision on shebeens. Welcome to you both, Anele and Maurice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us. We're very pleased and excited to be here.
Well, great.
Setokoza mthungwa to have you in our presence.
Ndlangamandla.
Yeah, that's originally, I think you were born in KZN, in Port Shepstone.
Ekamalaki, to be precise, yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
And that's basically Mtungwa, it's a clear name. So when you greet them, Mtungwa.
Oh, okay, Lionel, yeah. I learned something. Our email address, if you want to write to Lionel, and you're single and you're male, Lionel will take your messages. It's law@cliffcentral.com, and then our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg, lines the Twitter handle.
It's @HertzLaw, HERTZLAW.
Today we partnered with Legal Talk South Africa, which has a Facebook membership of 160,000.
Amazing. And constantly growing, if I may add.
You will be taking some of the questions from their members.
Yeah.
Okay, gent and lady, or lady and gent, let's talk about... First of all, if I may, Maurice Smithers, let me introduce you in a little more detail. You have a long history of doing good in South Africa, and you're very much part of the struggle. Give us a bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, well, I was born in Eastern Cape, actually, in Graaffreinet, a little town called Graaffreinet, but lived in Joburg since the age of 10, and from the age of 20... Yeah, got involved in various social justice issues, including, obviously, at the time, the anti-apartheid struggle. Paid my dues over the years. Worked in the UDF in the 80s, and then did a stint in government in the 90s into the 2000s. But I've spent a lot of time working at community level since the 1990s, particularly in the area where I lived, Yeovil Bellevue, which is an extraordinary area that has gone through an amazing transition from being a whites-only area to being a very mixed area to being today, in fact, an area that has over 50% foreign nationals living there. And it's now about 98% black. So I lived there for a very long time and watched the deterioration of the place, but tried with other community members to see how we could work with government to arrest the changes that were happening there. You know, the important thing to remember is that what happened to Yeovil Bellevue is what happens in all major cities where there's inner city decline. And there are ways of dealing with it. So that's what I did for many years. And in doing that, we came up against the challenges of alcohol abuse, which is why we ended up dealing with this particular case that we won late last year. Thanks.
Okay, we'll come to all that. What you've omitted to tell us today is that you're back to varsity. You're doing a master's in something.
Correct.
After 45 years, which is quite something.
Wow. Yeah, I dropped out of university back in 72. And because of my work in Yeovil, I decided to go back and study urban planning.
Wow, that's great.
And I've just done a year of urban planning, a diploma, and now I'm going into a master's this year.
Okay, so obviously as a you're a resident of the area.
Not anymore. I still live in the east, quite near to Yeovil Bellevue. I still work there, but I'm not actually staying there anymore.
What brought you to Worksmans, or how did you get there? What was the complaint that you had?
The particular complaint that we had was that government, the Gauteng government, had been trying since 2003 to come up with a strategy for dealing with shebeens. Shebeens, by their very nature, are illegal liquor outlets. In fact, a lot of people don't know that the word shebeen is not even a South African word. It's actually an Irish, a Gaelic word, which means
unlicensed.
Meant illegal whiskey originally,
yes,
and then became a word for an unlicensed liquor outlet.
There's actually a rock band called Shebeen from Ireland.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Shebeens would probably have been introduced in South Africa in the late 19th century, particularly in Joburg with the mines. And they grew from the early 1900s, early 20th century, because just post the South African War, the sale of what you call white liquor to black people was completely banned.
Yes.
And that ban stayed in place until 1961. So when Hugh Masekela is singing about Skokkiaan and various other things, Skokkiaan is in fact not a traditional alcohol. It's an attempt by the black community to create a more potent liquor than Umboti, because people weren't allowed to actually drink a white liquor. Although we know that it did happen, as particularly we know from the Sophiatown years, because everybody talks about the Sophiatown and the Shebeens and so on that were there. So the Gauteng government was trying to deal with this, and one of the ways in which they thought to do that was to, in 2004, to introduce what they called a Shebeen permit. And they invited every one of the something like 16,000 Shebeens to apply for a Shebeen permit. There were no requirements except that you existed. Mm-hmm. So if you had a Shebeen, you had, I think, 3 months to go to the Gauteng Liquor Board or Gauteng government and to register as a Shebeen, and you got a Shebeen permit, which protected you for 18 months from any kind of legal action. And in that time, they wanted all of those Shebeens to apply for a license, one or other license, in terms of the Gauteng Liquor Act, of which there are things like tavern licenses, pub licenses, restaurant licenses, etc. Unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, including the bureaucratic process involved in getting a liquor license, the cost, and so on and so forth, most Jabins didn't do it. So by the end of 18 months, government was now stuck, because they could, if they were to scrap the permits, then they would have to target all of the illegal Jabins. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to do that, so they gave themselves, they kept on rolling this permit system over for about another 8 years, until in 2012 they developed what they called their Jabin regulations.
Yes.
And the Jabin regulations were an attempt to create a license that would be much cheaper, much less onerous, would make it more possible to bring the Jabins into the regulatory fold. The problem for us, we had no problem with doing that. I mean, we think it's very important to regulate the industry and to bring people in and to encourage people to improve their businesses and so on. The problem we had was that the National Liquor Act says, for example, one of the objects of the Act is to provide for public participation in the consideration of applications for registration of people who manufacture and distribute alcohol. And the Gauteng Liquor Act says every applicant shall give notice of an application by publication in no less than 2 newspapers circulating in the area in which the premises are situated in the prescribed manner and in the provincial gazette, as well as causing the notices to be affixed to the premises.
Yes.
And that it would invite interested persons to lodge any objections in terms of Section 25. Mm-hmm. So the idea was that because liquor is not an ordinary product, because liquor has an impact on communities, communities should have the right to object if somebody applies for a license. And once you objected, then there'd be a hearing and all parties would be able to put their case. That requirement was excluded from the Jabin regulations, mm-hmm. which meant that all of the people living in the vicinity of the 16,000 odd Jabins that were in Gauteng had no right to object if they applied for a liquor license.
Okay.
And that was the substance of our case. We said the process is, the idea of the regulations is good, the process of regulation is good. What is not good is removing from people the right.
Why did you and your association take this matter to court?
Well, we've been battling around the issue of alcohol in Yeovil Bellevue for years.
How many Jabins are there?
Not that many Jabins, actually. It's only about, there were only about 20, mm-hmm. but there were more than 100 liquor outlets.
In Yeovil Bellevue?
Yeah.
What are we talking, 2 streets?
No. Dotted all over the place.
Okay.
But it's about 1.6 square kilometers.
And how many schools in the area?
There's about probably 6 to 10 schools of one kind or another, 2 government schools and then a lot of private schools.
Was the intention that this was all very prejudicial towards kids and the community?
Community at large.
Yeah.
You know, and again, the idea wasn't to say that people shouldn't have licenses or shouldn't have their businesses, but that if they lived near people who didn't want them to be there, that people should have the right to object. And we had this bizarre, we went to a hearing in Alex, and we had this bizarre encounter with the liquor board who said, when we said to them, why is this requirement not there? Mm. They said, no, but these Jabins have been there since 2004. There's no need to tell the community they're there. Mm. The liquor board itself completely misunderstood what the purpose of the advertising is, which is to give people the right
to object.
To object.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. How did you get to the very, very well-known and famous law firm, one of the big ones in South Africa, and to Anele Khumalo? How did you get to her?
Well, we went to pro bono.
Yeah.
And we said we need some legal help because we were, you know, an association of ratepayers. It's being a poor community, people didn't have money to go and pay lawyers, advocates, and so on. So through pro bono, we got to Worksmans, and they did an incredible job over a period of 4 years. Because we initially engaged
with them. Did this case go on for 4 years?
4 years.
Let's talk to a bit to Anele about it. Did you meet up with Maurice in the beginning, or did you come in afterwards? Or
we did. From the word go, I've been been working very well with Maurice.
Yes.
We obviously met through probono.org, and it initially started off with engaging with the Department of Economic Development and the Gauteng Liquor Board, bringing to the table what our concerns were about the regulations.
You're a mom, Manele. How did you feel about this from a personal point of view, having these shebeens all over the place? I mean, do you feel strongly that something should have been done about it? Or
quite strongly, yes, yeah. I did. And what we also tried to make everyone aware of was that we were also trying to strike a balance between giving off between allowing the shebeen owners to continue to operate their businesses, because we understood and accepted the economic benefits that flow from these kinds of institutions, and a lot of them are sometimes run by women.
Yeah.
So it was balancing the rights of those entrepreneurs against those of families and the community at large. So that was the key focus of this particular application that we launched, was to strike a balance between those two, where we both get to, one, have our say on the location of a particular establishment, juxtaposed to not having a shebeen next to a school or a clinic or a place of learning.
Now, before you launched this massive application to court, you obviously tried to talk to the powers. Their hands were tied, I guess. They said, well, that's the law. We can't change it. There is no right of objection by the community. Is that the kind of response you got from them?
Completely. And they took it a step further to say, but hang on, your client can't come at this late juncture to complain about the actual award of the shebeen permits, because as Maurice explained, these were permits that had been existing for quite a number of years. And what the initial system also did not allow is for people to actually object at that particular stage. So what the government was saying to us is like, hang on, you can't come now. The system has been in place. There are laws that prohibit you from objecting to the manner in which we've sought to regulate these institutions after such a number of years. And we said, that's not how the law works in this particular instance. If you are seeking to change how you regulate these particular institutions, we should be allowed to have a voice and participate in how you seek to regulate these particular institutions.
It was a very brave application to court, if you don't mind me saying it. I mean, you're fighting government here, all kinds. I mean, there were yourself, the Yeovil Bellevue Ratepayers Association, and another against 22 respondents, most of whom were tavern owners and shebeen owners, and then the government as well. And you took them to court. You said, listen, we want our say. You were trying to get the law changed here. At the time, is that what you were seeking?
We were trying to get to make sure that the values of the Constitution being espoused in Section 33, that we should all be given an opportunity to participate in important decision making. And it was a mammoth task. As you can see, there were a number of parties involved, some very senior counsel involved in the hearing of the application. And we were also armed to the teeth. We had quite a strong legal team.
Who was your legal team?
We worked with Advocate John Mehring from the Sandton Chambers. Uh-huh. We also had a number of advocates consulting and assisting us throughout the subsistence of the matter, and also some other various organizations, such as the Teddy Bear Clinic, who assisted in the collation and putting together of evidence that supports the negative impact that alcohol can have on certain communities, just to further drive home that point that in as much as there's an economic benefit to be derived from the sale of alcohol, there's also a juxtaposed negative impact that it does have on children primarily.
I note from the judgment of the court, the counsel that represented the respondent against you was Advocate Kruger, senior counsel, Advocate Budlender, who's a well-known counsel, and Dalian Poffel.
Correct.
I mean, could you get stronger? You must have been trembling at the knees when you walked into court.
We weren't. We knew that the merits were on our side.
Yeah.
The court had pronounced on many occasions the importance of audi al partem, which is giving another person an opportunity to speak. And in as much as we were, it was literally just me and the advocates and Naledi, my colleague who assisted me on the matter on the day of the hearing. But we knew that the law and the facts were on our side. and there was no turning about. And what I think there was a misunderstanding on the part of the respondents is that we wanted to do away entirely with the regulation or the existence of Shabins. Mm. And that was never our intention. Mm. We understood, and in our arguments, we made sure that we drove home the point that we understand the importance, the socio-economic importance of Shabins in the context of your townships and in your urban living spaces. We just wanted to make sure that those economic enterprises coexist efficiently with the needs of the communities.
Okay. The matter was heard on affidavits,
mm-hmm.
so no one gave evidence in court. The papers from your side and all 22 respondents, whatever, must have run into thousands of pages, or was it mainly on a legal aspect?
They did. And yeah. We had quite a number of interviews and affidavits submitted on behalf of community members. Mm. You'll see that one of the respondents was also actually a former VIT student, a blind VIT student, who also spoke about his personal experiences whilst living in Yeovil and how the operational hours of some of these institutions actually hampered his access, his ability to move around in Yeovil and to study. So we had quite a wide variety of people in support of our application from various aspects. Like I said, the Teddy Bear Clinic, we had Dr. Omar, who provided us with evidence on the impact of alcohol. We had Malusi, who's one of the applicants that I spoke to you about. Mm. And also we had someone from the clergy also coming to our aid and indicating to us the impacts of alcohol in communities.
Anele, who was your judge?
I can't remember.
Matojane.
Yes, Judge Matojane, yes.
Yeah. Was he with you all from the beginning all the way, or
he was?
Could you tell?
He was, and it was quite refreshing.
Yeah.
He was well prepared. He knew our arguments, and he also actually did give the our opposition an opportunity to ventilate and take him through their line of arguments, such as the importance of the economics of the Shabins, the fact that we had taken so long in actually bringing this application, because that was also a issue that was brought to us, and the number of people that we were actually impacting with this particular judgment. And just to show the magnitude of this matter, the people that who attended in court were just one of the associations that are impacted. When we wanted to initially serve this application on the people whom we thought would be affected, we realized we couldn't. When we sat down with a list that we'd obtained from the department as to who are the affected Shabin owners, there were a number of addresses that were incomplete, areas we had no idea.
It must
have
been a nightmare to serve these papers on all these people and to find the Shabin owners.
Complete nightmare. So yeah. we had to get creative about how we were going to bring this message across to the people who need to come up and say, why should we not be granted this particular order? So we actually looked to some of our clients who are owners of newspapers to assist us and actually publish the notice of our application on their various media platforms, so we can access these people whom we need to engage with on this particular issue.
Some of the respondents, let me read them out. The MEC for Department of Economic Development, the chairperson of Gauteng Liquor Board, Minister of Trade and Industry, these are heavyweights that have access to the best lawyers. Why were they so intent on opposing you? Why didn't they say, you make a good point, the community should have their day, they should have an opportunity of objecting?
Well, you know how government does not like to admit in certain instances that they're wrong. So their primary issue was that we have gone along with this particular system for so long. Why are you coming now at this late juncture to object? And actually, we are of the view that we've satisfied that particular requirement of giving communities the opportunity to speak. And we said that is insufficient. And the example of that meeting that Maurice spoke to you about was one of the examples that the state used in support of their satisfying the public participation requirement. Mm-hmm. And the judge said that is insufficient. That does not even begin to meet the threshold that has been set by the Constitutional Court, the highest court in the land, as to what exactly suffices as satisfying the public participation requirement.
Okay, so let's take it very simply. If I want to open a Shabin now, what is it? What I have to do, Maurice?
You're stuck. Yeah. You're stuck.
Because basically what happened was when we initially, you know, after they refused to just even talk to us, and we brought the case. About a year into the time, the MEC for Economic Development issued a government gazette in which he suspended the entire process, because they recognized that it would be foolish for them to continue and then have to deal with the consequences if later on they lost the case, which they did. So they what they did was they reverted to the Shabin permit system.
Yeah.
And they said all of the people who've got permits, those permits will remain intact and of in force until such time as the case is resolved. What then happened with the court case?
Yes. What did the judge actually?
The judge said that what the state was doing was completely inconsistent with the aims and objectives of the Gauteng Liquor Act of 2003, own act.
Yes.
Secondly, he said they've got 2 years in which to resolve the situation, 2 years in which to come up with an alternative solution. But for that period, the Shabin permits will remain in force. But the problem is that for anybody who wants to get a Shabin now, is that the requirements of the regulations are that you have to have had a Shabin permit from 2004. So I know there were some of the associations which were contesting that, but of course anybody wants to open a liquor outlet today, there are many other ways in which you can do that. You don't have to open a Shabin. You can open a pub, you can open a restaurant,
a tavern.
And so on. So those are still available to people, but as far as Shabins go, that can't
happen.
The
bottom line is that the judge said that the law's got to change, kind of thing. Is that are we waiting for a change in the law?
Yes. So what the department is now required to do is that obviously their regulations, which sought to convert the permits to the licenses, those will remain in place because they obviously can't take them away as there'll be a gap in the law. They now have to go back to the drawing board and put together new regulations that are going to be in line with his pronouncements and the judgments, and afford communities an adequate opportunity to object to the conversion of a Shabin permit to a Shabin license.
Okay, so also all very technical lines. You want to say something?
Yeah. No, I actually just wanted to find out, because there are Shabins, there are taverns. Are there differences? Yeah. And if so, this ruling, how is it going to affect the other in the case of a tavern?
So what these regulations sought to do is that they obviously they recognize that Shabins are different to your taverns, your sports bars, and so on and so forth. But they sought to try and bring those under that umbrella. But in doing so, they did not do it properly. Like, you'll recall that a tavern requires a bathroom and certain facilities to be available. So if you want to open up a tavern as of today, you can still do that. You are not affected by these regulations. You're only affected if you're a Shabin permit holder. All you'll need to do is just say to the government, okay, I want to now convert my permit to a license. What do I need to do? Who do I need to notify? Yeah.
Anela, the bottom line is, in future, if anyone wants to apply for a Shabin license, the community must be involved. Is that a fair statement? And that's what you set out to achieve, and that's what's been achieved.
Completely.
So if people out there, the public, are listening, they're saying, hold on, my suburb is running crazy with all these Shabins. I can't stand it anymore. They must know that in future they will have the right to object.
Correct. The same. Yeah. They'll be given the same opportunity that they actually have now when someone wants to open a tavern. Because what you then require to do is to publish it in a newspaper, and you are given an opportunity to object. You weren't given that opportunity.
This is a great result, isn't it?
It's a phenomenal result.
It's groundbreaking for all of us.
It is.
Marvelous.
It is.
But Gary, I think I want to add something, though. One of the challenges we have, and I now work for a small NGO called the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance.
I've looked them up. Yeah, well done. It's a regional
body that covers 8 different African countries. And the objective of SAPA is to, in all of these countries, to give the public more of a say in the formulation of policy and the implementation of policy around alcohol. And this is a global problem, by the way.
Yes.
There's also called a Global Alcohol Policy Alliance. And one of the things that is a challenge around this question of licensing, I mean, how many people around the table here might have known, or of our listeners, know that for all the other licenses, that there is a process through which people have to advertise in the newspaper or advertise in the government gazette or advertise on the building, and that they have a right to object. I would hazard a guess that the majority of people in the country do not know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why people suddenly wake up one day and find there's a liquor outlet nearby them and they've had no say in the matter.
Maurice, I need to cut you, and now forgive me. I'll tell you why. Something that really I find extremely interesting is how Worksmans, the top one of the top legal firms in Johannesburg, took on this case. It was a massive undertaking. They could have lost it, in which event they pick up all the costs and all the hard work they did. I'm fascinated from as a lawyer of as to how the pro bono legal department of a firm like Worksmans works. So I spoke to Anelia about it, and she said, Gary, there's a man called Dakalo Singo. I think he heads it up. And let him come and talk to us about the pro bono legal department. So we're going to run a separate show on it. We're going to bid you please stay for the second part. Many thanks for this. Well done for having the gumption to take everyone to court. It's very great of you because it helps all of us. We have to stamp this out. Mm-hmm. If there's a proliferation of shebeens all over the place, I'm very pleased that that will now stop in time. Very good.
Now, one last thing I'd like to just mention is that you mentioned the three first respondents. Mm. What was interesting about the case was the DTI, in fact, said, we have no interest in the case. We are not going to. We will abide by whatever decision. And I think it's important to note that there are very strong people in government who are pushing for a reform of alcohol legislation, trying to make things more protective of public health.
I think we'll get you back, Maurice, on liquor generally, liquor.
Yeah.
We'll get you back. In the meantime, many thanks to you, Maurice Smithers, and to yourself, Anelle, but you're going to stay with us, and we'll be back. It'll be a separate podcast. Thank you for this.
This is CliffCentral.com.